Today's episode of Ariel Helwani's MMA show contains explicit language that may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Back in your life on this Wednesday, November 6, 2019. Hello again, everyone. I'm Ariel Helwani. Welcome back to the program. What a special one we have planned for all of you. This is a huge honor, a huge privilege to have the world's most dangerous man, Ken Shamrock, in studio, in the flesh, face to face, nose to nose, right here at ESPN in our little tiny closet studio. Ken, how are you? I'm not going to waste time. I'm not going to have a big intro and all that stuff. It's really great to see you, and it's really great to have you on the show. Thank you for doing this.
I appreciate you, man. Thank you.
So we have a lot to discuss. There's a lot going on in your life. Never a dull moment.
Oh, man. Just keeping it rolling.
So there I am on social media just a couple of weeks ago, and I'm scrolling through, and then I see 55-year-old Ken Shamrock flying all over wrestling ring, Impact Wrestling. And I'm like, wait a second, what is going on here? Ken Shamrock is back. Not only is he back, he looks like he's 25. He's flying around like a 19-year-old. How did this happen? How are you back? Why are you back?
Yeah, I'll tell you, man. It's amazing when you have something staring you in the face, even though I have all this knowledge, all the understanding of health and fitness, and yet I can't see the most obvious thing in front of me. I mean, I lost four fights. I won one, then I lost seven. And whole time I'm thinking, man, I never would quit. I had always figured out, man, I'll find a way to beat this. I know this isn't it. I still have the desire. I still have the ability. What's going on? And I just couldn't figure it out. I just kept trying, but I kept falling short. Injuries, my tiredness, just I couldn't get it. And I remember my wife saying, you know, maybe it's just time. And I was like, man, I don't feel like it. And so I said, all right, well, maybe she's right. So I walked away. 9 months, 12 months later, I said, you know, I'm bored. I'm depressed. I'm wandering around doing all these meet and greets, but just not happy. So I go back to the gym. I don't like what I see in the mirror. I start training and I feel good. I was like, wow, it's great. I feel pretty good. And people start commenting, man, you look good. You look really good. And I felt really good. And I was like, man, I feel great. So then I got a chance to go to Australia and do some matches. And I remember I had my first match, not really expecting a whole lot. And I did a match and I was like, wow, I feel good. And after doing that and then getting the chance to go to Impact and having the first match with Moose flying over the top rope, it just felt like I had no limitations. And I remember I had a time to reflect of why. Why is this happening? And I thought to myself, the obvious. I gave myself a chance to rest. My whole life is nothing but training, competing. What's the next thing? Back in the gym, training, competing. For almost 20 years, 25 years, never letting my body rest. When I took that year off, that's all it was. I was so tired. My body was so beat down. I never gave myself a chance to rest. And once I did that, now I'm here. I'm wrestling. I'm enjoying myself. I'm starting a new promotion with Valor BK. I'm flying all over the world. I'm competing and wrestling. I'm doing interviews and I have all this energy. I feel healthy. My gym training's awesome and I don't have any injuries. Even though I've had them through my career, I don't feel them. And I really truly believe it's because I gave myself a chance to rest. The absolute obvious thing to do was to let my body rest.
Did you ever actually officially retire? You never actually said the words, I'm retired, or did you?
No, and I won't. For me, it's just not in my vocabulary because I always believe that I'm going to always compete. At what level, you know, I don't know. I'm not going to – obviously, I don't think there's a career for me in going in the inside the pit or you know, in a caged arena to fight. You know, I know I'm 55 and that those days are gone. But I won't mention the words retire because for me, that's basically saying I give up. And so I will always constantly in my mind be competing with myself somehow, somewhere.
initially when you knew that maybe the time was up and you're talking to your wife and you're saying to yourself, okay, maybe it's the end of the road, is there a level of depression that hits you? You know, I hear from fighters all the time about, like, it's a drug, right? And you miss it and you can't say goodbye and you keep coming back for more. How did you react in those early stages?
Yeah, depressed. Thankfully, I have a good family. Mm. I took care of it while I was fighting. Made sure I made time so that when I stepped away from fighting, I still had one. So for me, it was really about family, having kids around, having grandkids around. When I got into those states, I spent time with them. So it was really helpful. But also being able to go out and do interviews and meet and greets, it kept me somewhat engaged, and it helped. But I'll tell you what really drew me out of that, because it was almost 10, 11 months that I went through trying to find out what am I, right? If I'm not fighting, what am I? And so it took that long for me to just say, you know, I don't like what I see in the mirror. This is not me. This is not who I want to be, as a guy that's out of shape, a guy that's hurting all the time, physically and mentally. And I needed to get back in the gym. And that's where it started, was when I went back to the gym. I felt alive again. I felt like, okay, this is who I am. And then other things off of that, when I went to the gym, I started training, I started working out, all this other stuff started happening around me. Was positive because I was positive.
How did you get to going to the gym? Like that first step, right? When you're out for 10 months or so, for a guy who's been around that his whole life, was it hard to kind of get in that groove again?
It was, because when you go in there, normally you're usually the guy.
Yeah.
And so when you go in there, the expectations have got to be severely lower, not expecting that much from yourself. And so when I went back, my wife reminded me, hey, listen, you're not 25 anymore. You're not 30 anymore. You're not even 40 anymore. don't have too many high expectations. And so going in there, I didn't. You know, I started out doing things that were light, nice and easy reps, not looking around, getting in and going to during a time that wasn't that many people there either.
Right.
So that I could go in and just get my training in and not worry about what I look like or how I feel around people. And I did that for probably 3 to 4 months, and my body just jumped right back into where I was at. And even better, because then I didn't have because I was doing the training and the sparring and all, and I was constantly aching. And so I was able to say, hey, I'm not going to be doing the sparring and I'm not going to be doing the grappling. I'm just going to do fitness. And so by doing that, it took a lot of stress off my body. I was able to get my body to look good. And yet I could still, which I didn't know I could do anymore until I did it the other with Bound for Glory, where I did a Hurricanrana, I did a suicide dive, a showstopper, all kinds of things that I didn't know whether I was going to be able to do or not. But I know me, that if I tried to practice it, I wouldn't be able to do it because it's not for real. But if doing it during the match, I knew I forced myself to do it.
So you never practiced those things?
No, I just did it.
At all?
No.
Really?
No.
When was the last time you did them?
In WWF was the last one.
That's 90s. The last time.
Yeah, yeah. And I just did it, but I know me. And I just said, do it, and I hit it, I'm good. If I miss it, I'll sell it.
There isn't a part of you that is like, maybe I should try this out once?
No.
Just to see if I still got it?
No, because then that's more, what if I mess it up
right.
And I can't even wrestle?
Sure.
So I figure if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it on a big stage. That way the pressure is on, and that's what I do. When it's pressure, I'll do it. And so I put myself in that position knowing that – and I felt, like I said, I knew I could do it just because of the way my body felt, the training I was doing, the fitness stuff. I realized that I wasn't the same guy I was a year ago. I knew that this was very – it would be easy for me to do if I would just do it.
Okay, so you don't consider fighting, but you consider wrestling.
Yep.
You consider coming back to wrestling. Do you reach out to Impact, or does Impact reach out to you? How does that happen?
Yeah, like I said, I was over in BCW in Australia, and just to, have some fun.
Yeah.
See what it felt like. I felt great, and word started traveling, and, me and Brian Cage, I think there was some chatter back and forth between me and Brian Cage, and then Moose kind of chimed in, and that's how it got started, was said something. It was, being a heel. And, of course, I kind of hammered back. And
right.
Next thing I know, I'm in a ring against him, right? So it was, that's kind of how it got started. But then, you know, after that first match that I had with him, there was really no vision about how long I would be here. But I think after that first match, because we hear it all the time, I feel great. You got these old-time wrestlers coming in there.
Yeah.
They may feel great, but they're not at where they used to be. They can't do the things they used to do. And I wanted to make sure I made a statement in that first match that I'm not just blowing hot air. When I tell you that I can do at 100% at full speed, I can do that. And so that was really a match for me to make a statement that, you know, I'm not just saying, hey, I'm coming back for the title and, you know, I'm putting the wrestling world on notice. There wasn't hot air. That's for real. And you know, I put a lot of hard work in, a lot of training to get myself prepared so that when I made that statement, it wasn't just about me talking, it was about me doing.
Who in the span of your life has been the happier guy? Ken Shamrock, the MMA fighter, or Ken Shamrock, the pro wrestler?
Oh, yeah, you know, I think both, but I was at a different point in my life when I was an MMA fighter. I was more serious. I was more determined to achieve a goal. And I think when you're focused like that, sometimes people think you're not having a good time, but that's not true. I mean, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed being the world's most dangerous. I enjoyed being the number one ranked fighter in the world. I mean, I enjoyed all of that, but the only way that could have happened was for me to be that focused. Mm. And so I understand that. Now it's more about me enjoying life. It's not about achieving goals, because I think I've almost achieved all of them that I wanted to achieve. But now it's about me going farther than that and challenging myself to do it again.
Mm. Is there a part of you that wishes, like, man, if I was fighting in this era, I would have made a lot more money doing MMA, right? You see some of the numbers that the guys are making now, well into the, you know, 8, 9, 10 million. Does that bother you, or are you at peace with that?
No, I'm happy for him. I am. You know, I wouldn't trade doing what I did for what these guys are making now, because what I did was we broke ground. We did things first. We were trendsetters. We made history. And so for me, that's worth so much more to me than money, because I can always make money, you know. I got this Valor BK coming up, you know. That thing's right now is, you know, we got our second one coming up. We kind of hinted out at LeVar Johnson and Mark Godbeer as our main event. We'll see if we get that worked out. And, you know, it's blowing up. We got almost 11,000 within 40 minutes when we made the announcement. So it's blowing up. So for me, being able to have that credibility of what I was able to do early on in my life and being able to do a lot of things first to now where I get to basically bring it back full circle again, address some of the issues that I was disappointed with when they put gloves on, which is something that I've always wanted to do. The vision about Bare Knuckle was about to, shedding light on the lie that's been told for so long. And I'm not sure it was meant to be a lie, but that's what they did, was they sold the glove as being safe. And the reality of it is anybody that understands how that world worked back then was that guys had to fight three times in one night, sometimes four. And that a guy would go out there and punch somebody and break his hand. And so for them to put a glove on, now they've got guys that can fight multiple times now and not break their hands, so they're able to come back and fight. And it even went more than that, because now they're bringing guys back every 3 months, 4 months, they can fight again. And on top of that, even go deeper on that, is that now you've got guys like Chuck Liddell, guys that just threw bombs. They got longer careers because of that glove. If they didn't, those guys would have maybe 2-3 years, because their hands would be brittle, because they'd have broke them every time they knocked somebody out. So there was a lot of that, and I understand it. It's business, right? I mean, it's smart. If I was doing that and I wanted a guy to come back, I'd do the same thing. I was like, I want to keep my guys winning. I want to keep them coming back. And so I understand it, but I fell in love with the purity of the UFC in the very beginning days when there was no gloves, and the purity of the submissions and the knockouts were pure. You had to be good in order for you to win. You couldn't throw sloppy punches, and you couldn't, when you caught somebody's back, that was more of a, you know, 10% chance you'd get out as opposed to a 50-50 now.
Do you still watch the UFC?
I don't. Well, I mean, it's not that I choose not to. It's just that I'm traveling. I'm busy doing a lot of stuff. So I don't really get to actually watch it, but I do follow it.
Okay.
I know Colby Covington, you know, I hear things like that and some things that were done, you know. So I don't get to actually watch full fights, but I do kind of follow it just by hearing things through social media.
Well, it's interesting because they were just at MSG and they had this BMF belt, Nate Diaz and Jorge Masvidal. And when I think of like the original BMFers, I think of you, right?
Yeah.
Do you chuckle when you see these things? Like when you talk about, you know, how it used to be and what you guys risked in the early days?
It's funny to hear these guys talk about toughness and, you know, being tough and being bad. And it's like, man, if they only knew what we went through in those beginning days with no training, there was no map of how to train. And it was guys that would go to the park and get in fights with people in order to get training, real training in, right?
I mean, really?
It was, yeah. I mean, you see a lot of guys that would just do a road tour.
Mm.
And they would drive from one end of California to the other end of California, and they would stop at different places and do fights on these different promotions that were in the beginning days when there was promotions everywhere. They would drive across country just hitting every stop and fighting at them just to get the training in, right? So it was no map. There was no way of real training per se for everyone. I mean, obviously, we developed it early on. I was able to do that. But for most guys, you hear stories like that all the time, how guys would go to the park and fight, or they would take fights anywhere just so they can actually get in and get a fight somewhere where they really knew what they were doing. Because back in the day, I remember when I was over in Japan before they started the UFC, I couldn't get anybody to train with me. I would go into karate schools and boxing schools. Hey, strike him, we'll take you down. They're like, no, what are you talking about? Or I would say, hey, get a wrestler and say, shoot on me. I'm not going to knock you out, but I'm going to punch you. And you're like, no way. It's like, just, there was nobody to do that. So I had to open a gym. I just slowly start training people. So for them to start talking about being a bad MNF, you know, I just kind of laugh and go, oh my gosh, you guys are wearing 4-ounce gloves. You fight one time a night every 6 months to a year. Really? Come on.
And the fight ended via cut.
Right.
You see that?
Yeah.
Which made things even more confusing.
And especially now that Valor's coming out and it's truly bare knuckled. There's none of this tape and, you know, holding and rabbit punching people. You know, it's a straight up bare knuckle boxing. And that's the way it should be. I mean, this holding someone's head and being able to rabbit punch them and be able to clinch them and punch them is just dirty. And to me, that's not bare knuckle fighting. That's not bare knuckle boxing. And, it sets a bad standard for what we're trying to get legalized. And, having people do stuff like that is just, it's ugly.
One thing that kind of bothers me about the current state of the UFC is that I feel like the pioneers, the trailblazers, the legends like you and many others aren't recognized enough. Like, I don't see you in the front row. I don't see you being, you know, talked about International Fight Week at a big event. I feel like it's all very contemporary. I think Major League Baseball, for example, does a great job. All-Star Weekend, they bring out all the legends, right? And we get to celebrate them. Why doesn't that happen in the UFC? Why aren't you being celebrated? Why aren't your counterparts being celebrated?
It's a shame because it's not about whether you like somebody or not. It's about what the fans and the history of the UFC and no holds barred and MMA stand for, the people that helped build this organization before the Fertittas. And to me, it's being cut out, and it's being cut out on purpose. And to me, it's a shame because just because they recognize how it started doesn't mean it takes away from anything that they did. In fact, by them not doing that, it really makes people pissed off that they're not recognizing and giving credit where credit's due. So, yeah, it is a shame that it doesn't happen because I think if they did, MMA wouldn't be in the state that it's in right now with half the people not liking it, half the people kind of on the fence on it because there's so much been said about the older stars because, listen, it's tough. I get it. Guys get older. They get pissed off when they have to go. They say things. They do things that are not good for the sport. Dana had to go through a lot of that with these guys backlashing at him, but Dana took the wrong stand. He tried to fight back. And as a promoter or as a person that's in that position, should have an understanding that these guys are depressed. They're disappointed. They were great at one time. They carried the company on their back, and all of a sudden they're not wanted anymore. And that it has to be handled with kid gloves. Just because they come out and call you a jerk off, or you cheated them, you lied to them, for you to actually challenge them to a fight, or for you to stand up and call them irrelevant, to me that is just a horrible stance for a promoter to take when these guys, multiple guys, had carried the company on their back. Yes, they were wrong. Yes, they probably came off the wrong way. But you got to understand where they were coming from. They were once relevant, and now all of a sudden they ain't. And so they take it out one or two ways. They start drinking. They get into drugs. They cheat on their wives. They ruin their life. Or they get angry, and they lash out at someone. And that someone is usually somebody that's pushing them out. And having an understanding of that is just like, hey, take it on the chin and try to, you know, build that relationship back up again. Because it's a tough spot for anyone who is a fighter to have to be told they're done. And for Dana not to recognize that and go, you know what, I'm going to take the high road here and I'm going to salvage this relationship because it's good for the sport and the fans.
What's your relationship like with your brother Frank these days?
Yeah, as far as I know, we're good.
As far as you are you in contact?
We don't talk a whole lot. I know the last time, and we were good, but this thing with the animal, that thing, and I got attacked.
You got attacked.
I got attacked.
Story was that he left the dog. I think your mom's dog, right, or his mom's
his
dog?
His mom's dog.
At the airport, because he couldn't find someone to
tend
to it.
Right.
But he was very apologetic afterwards. He didn't mean to leave the dog unattended. You got attacked for that? Why is that? Because people just made a mistake?
Yeah.
Okay, wow.
So when they came after me on social media, I replied back, get your story straight.
Yeah.
And for you to be a news media coming after me and not having your facts straight is really sad. You should make sure you got your facts straight. That was my brother, not me. And then he came back and said I threw him under the bus and he got upset at me. But I think he was just under a lot of pressure and, you know, everybody was attacking him. And I even tweeted on some of the things they were saying, you know, you guys should be ashamed because what you're doing to him is what he did to that dog. What makes you any better?
Mm.
And it wasn't like Frank legitimately wanted to go out and hurt this dog. It wasn't smart. It wasn't very responsible. Of what he did, but he's not a malicious guy. He's not going to go out and try and kill a dog or starve a dog to death. He literally just didn't think. Mm. He just thought, okay, somebody will find it and they'll take him, you know? So it wasn't the way they tried to make it sound. Wasn't like he went out there and hung the dog.
Right.
He put it back there with some water and some food, left it at a rental place where I guess he rented the truck or something and left it there. And I know exactly what he's thinking. They'll find the truck when he turns it in. They'll see the dog and they'll take it to themselves because he couldn't get anybody to take it. So I know what he was thinking. You know, it was a poor move. But, you know, people got to understand that Frank didn't do that to hurt the dog. It wasn't even an intention of his. He just figured somebody else would take care of it.
Would it be fair to say, like, you'll never be, like, the best of friends?
No, I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know, hopefully time, you know. There's some heavy issues, and it doesn't even about me and him. I think it's more about him and my dad.
Okay.
And some decisions that he made when he passed away. I think they're haunting him.
Decisions your dad made or Frank made?
Frank made.
Okay.
Because my dad wanted to pass away and he wanted to talk to Frank to, you know, kind of let him die in peace, and Frank didn't give him that chance.
Ah.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I think that and I'm not sure it is, isn't, who knows, but that would be hard for me even if I was mad at someone and I made that. It would be a knowing that they wanted to put this to rest before they passed.
What did they want to put to rest?
Well, they were fighting, they were arguing, they hadn't talked in a while. And so we invited Frank down when he had went into a coma and he came out, but he was still in a coma when Frank went to visit him the first time.
Mm.
And then when he came out of the coma, we told him Ed Frank had come down to visit. And Frank knew he was in the coma, but he came down. And that's the reason why I think that there's other issues there, because he came down when he was in a coma, but but he wouldn't come down when he came out of the coma, when he was getting ready to pass away. So I think there was some things that he had to deal with and admit to or work out with my dad that he just wasn't willing or ready to do. But unfortunately, my dad didn't have any more time. Mm. You know, he was passing. We brought him home on respite, and he was passing, and we told him he's going to die in a couple of days. So, you know, he wants to talk to you. And he said, I'll mourn at home. And so, yeah, but even since that, we even talked after that, you know, where we did the couple conversations and we were good. And, but, you know, like you said, we're never going to be, at least at that time, we weren't going to be calling each other on holidays or anything. And I think a lot of it has to do with whatever he's dealing with, because I personally don't have, and I did have issues with him because of those things, but we put those to rest, I thought.
How close were you to actually fighting? Remember when you guys had like the website, Blood Brothers, right, and all that? How close was that to actually happening?
Well, I know me, I'd have done it in a heartbeat. I mean, I was there. And I don't think Frank was. I think, and not that he was afraid, because he probably could have beat me. You know, because
at that point, how old are you? 45 or so?
I was late 40s. Yeah. So yeah, I was past 45. So, and I had been beating myself up training all the time, never took time off. And so, but because of the anger I had, I'd have fought him without even thinking about it. Without even thinking about losing, you know, Frank had gotten very good, and so if he would have fought me, he probably would have won. So
why didn't it happen? It just never came to fruition.
I don't know. Okay. I mean that was a while back, but I don't know. But I know I was game. You know, I was game. I was angry, and I wanted to beat him up. You know, I'm not sure I got the chance on that, but I was that angry where I couldn't even see the idea of me losing to him. I just couldn't see it, right? Because I was that angry. And of course, you know, he never was able to beat me. And but there's no doubt in my mind that I look back on it now with where I was at and where he was at, I'd have had a hard time winning.
You know, every fighter, I think, wants to go out on top, right? Have that moment, they win, they say goodbye. You didn't get that chance. Does that bother you?
No. No, because there's nothing to say goodbye to. You know, I mean,
does it bother you that your last fight isn't a win?
No.
How come?
Well, I think that I'm content with what I did. You know, I look back on all the things I was able to do, and yeah, of course you want to go out on a winning streak. But then, would I have gone out? Would I have said, okay, yeah, I'm done? I can't, because if I'm winning, I ain't stopping. Mm. I don't have that mentality. I don't have a mentality of giving up or quitting or stopping. So I think it had to be that way, because I never would have stopped.
Never.
No, I'd have kept fighting.
You would have just gone until you started to lose.
Until I started losing. Yeah.
Is that like a guy like George St. Pierre? He left as champion. He left on a winning streak. Right. That's damn near impossible, right?
Right.
You can't even wrap your head around that.
I couldn't do it.
Couldn't do it.
No, could not do that.
Isn't that the goal, though, to leave when it's on your terms as opposed to their terms?
But it was on my terms. Mm. It was on my terms that I knew I was done.
Okay.
I would have never known I was done, and I would have never stopped until I knew that. That's the whole thing. That's why I kept going. That's why I kept losing and kept trying to fight, because I always figured I'd find a way to win. And I'd have never stopped until I couldn't win. And I stopped because I couldn't win.
The night of your last fight, did you know that it was your last fight, or did it take some time to actually come to that conclusion?
No, I didn't know it was my last fight. I just, in my mind, it was like, dude, I can beat this. I know I can figure out a way. I know it. And I was just, and that's why I became the champion I became. And I was able to do all this stuff, everything, you know, is because I know I can beat it. And, but then there's that moment when you realize, which has never happened to me in my life, that I can't beat it. That was hard. And even in my mind, I never accepted I couldn't. I just accepted the fact that I got to stop. But even in my mind, I always thought, well, you know, I still think I could have beat it, you know. But in my mind, knowing, well, how much more damage do I have to take before I do? And if I do, who am I fighting?
Does it drive you crazy? Like, your mind, you still feel like you can do it, but your body is just not reacting. It's just not performing the way you want it to perform. Is that a hard thing to come to terms with?
Oh, man. Yeah, especially when you're in there.
Yeah.
You see it coming.
Yeah.
And you know that you can do it, but you can't. It's just like being stuck in mud. Like, you just like, what are you doing? I remember getting hit and going, I saw it. I saw it. Why, how did I get caught? I saw it. And it's just, it's frustrating, especially with the rules changed. I know when I got hit by a hoist, it was like, okay, that was ridiculous. Frustrating. Kimbo. Frustrating. Frustrating because I had him choked and I let him go. And normally, if I'm in that killer mode, I don't let him go. I don't care if he tapped or not. I'm choking him out. So that was another thing where I looked at and go, man, what'd I do that for? Just because he tapped, it doesn't mean, why am I letting him go? Because John didn't come in and tap me or stop me. I just let him go.
Why did you let him go?
Because I remember the match, John said, because it was a, you know, heat there, which I always do.
Yeah.
And he goes, when you guys have a submission, a leg lock or an arm bar, do not go past the point of hurting somebody or I will disqualify you. If you get a submission, stop when I say break. Right? So he was warning because he knew there was heat and we knew we were going to try to hurt one another, which in my mind I wasn't. I was at a point to where I wanted to make a statement that I was bigger than that. And so when I got him in the choke, my thought process was, I'm going to show him how to be a champ. I'm going to show him how to be a bigger man. So I put the choke on him, and when he did that tap in the front and he did the tap here, I let him go, trying to be the sportsman, like trying to set an example. Like, I don't got too many fights left, so it's not like I'm trying to be a world champion and make people afraid of me anymore. I'm going to try to make people love me. And so I ended up just breaking off the hold, thinking I was doing the right thing. Then when I broke off the hold, I look down at him and he pops up. He literally says in the interview that he went out, right? He literally says that I went out, right? And then when he came back, he pops up. I slide off, catch him with a punch. And in today's world, they're going to stop the fight. Even though in my mind, I was still good to go. Even though he hit me hard, but I was fine. Even though I went back, it was one of those flash things, boom, but I was back. Stopped. Same thing with the hoist fight. Frustration, you think about those things as a fighter, it could drive you nuts and make you unhappy the rest of your life. But the way I look at it with the hoist thing wasn't meant to be. Because to not see a knee that clear of a knee to the groin, the referee doesn't see it. It's just, that's just the way it's supposed to be. I don't care how you want to slice it. You know, when I fought him in the second time where there was no judges, I didn't get the win. Clearly won the fight, but no judges. Then I fight him the first one. They take my shoes away. He catches me with a choke because I'm cocky. I lose. In a lot of these situations, 50-50, I'm winning. 50-50, I'm winning. But those are fights that are just the way it is, and it wasn't supposed to happen. It's just the way it is. Same thing with the Kimbo where I choked him. Wasn't supposed to happen. So like you said, when you get to that point where you're at the end of your career, I don't know I'm at the end of my career. I still think I can beat it. But you're fighting. You have to come to a conclusion, right? Like, okay, it's time. And you got to be comfortable with that. And you got to know that. If I'm winning those, just think, if I win those, I'm still fighting. I'm going to be still fighting because I won't know when it's up, because I'm built the way that I'm not content with just winning. I'm only be content when I'm done. That's how I think. When I am done, and the only way I know I'm done is when I'm losing.
Fascinating conversation with the great Ken Shamrock. We will get back to that in a second. But first, let me tell you about my good friends over at Roman. As you know, talking about erectile dysfunction isn't easy. Usually, we just brush it off or blame ourselves, saying things like, I lost my mojo, or we avoid it altogether with excuses like, I had a long day at work. Sorry, honey, I'm just not feeling it. But with Roman, it is easy to talk about it. With a real doctor who can prescribe real medication, it's simple, safe, and totally discreet. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. The doctor will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free 2-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and totally discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to roman.com/Ariel, that's me, A-R-I-E-L, and complete an online visit. Erectile dysfunction used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today to connect with a doctor and take care of it. Just go to roman.com/Ariel to get a free online visit and free 2-day shipping. That's getroman.com/Ariel for a free visit to get started. Getroman.com/Ariel. Now back to my conversation with the world's most dangerous man. Can I ask you about October 4th, 2008, one of the most memorable nights in MMA history? Could you tell me what really happened in Sunrise, Florida? You're about to fight Kimbo.
Oh, yeah, yeah. See, that to me is so
give me
weird.
The shoot. What's the shoot?
Unbelievable, man. It's like...
You're about to fight Kimbo on CBS.
Kimbo Slice.
Yes.
I'm thinking, how is people even think I'm going to lose to this guy, right? Yeah. I'm not at my best, but Kimbo is nowhere near me, especially at that time, right? Yeah. My dad, we talked about my dad, right? He was in a coma. He comes out of the coma.
Okay.
Right? So we fly out. We get to the venue. In my contract, I'm stated that I'm the highest paid guy on the card. Main event, nobody's getting paid more than me. There was supposed to be a fight in Vegas. Didn't happen. So I believe it was Roy Nelson and someone else or...
Andre Arlovsky.
Yes.
Yes.
So they bring him on the card.
From Elite XC. No, from Affliction.
Yes.
On the Elite XC card, yes.
They're getting paid more than me.
When did you find this out?
The day before the fight.
You find this on the Friday?
Yes.
How do you find it out?
Just through, well...
commission?
I forget his... And one of the guys that was managing me at the time had told me that he heard that they were... So I approached, had a meeting with them and said, hey, what's the deal? And they said, well, yeah, but we're not paying them. And I said, are they on the card? Are they fighting on my card? He goes, yeah, there's some main event. I said, then you need to pay me more.
Wow. And do you remember the discrepancy? Like, were they getting paid way more than you?
They were getting double what I was getting.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Both of them or just one?
I don't know, but okay. I know what...
At least one.
I know what Orlovsky was getting.
Okay. What right? was he getting? Can you tell us?
No.
Okay.
But he was getting more, double what I was getting. And okay. I was like, and I worked out a deal with them because they were doing this thing. And I said, okay, I'll work with you. But on my next fight, I'm getting this. It was supposed to be another raise, right?
On the fight after Kimbo?
Yes.
Okay.
So we worked in a clause in there. No one gets paid more than me. So they get on our card, right? And I have this meeting with them. And they tell me, too bad. Tough luck. Either fight or we'll sue you.
Really?
I was like, all right. And this is where this thing that everybody thinks that happened because of this, right? So this is probably the day before the fight. So that night I get a call from the hospital that my father went into a coma, right? I'm like, you're kidding me. It's like, I'm dealing with this, trying to figure out how I can make my money. All of a sudden, my dad goes into a coma, and I'm like, I got to go back. I got to go home. But they're going to sue me because they're not going to believe me, right? Because this just happened. So I remember sitting there, and I had a conversation with everyone. Hey, this is what's happening. What do I do? And they're saying, you know, your dad would want you to fight. And I was like, man, I just don't know if I can do this, man. My mind's not in it. So I said, I made the decision. Okay, I'm going to fight. So I told Dan, I said, clear everybody out. Can you go get your gear? And I was in the suite. And I said, have everybody clear everything out of the living room here. And I just need to sweat. I need to go just get my mind back on what I'm supposed to be doing. So we moved everything out. We got on the carpet there, and I was just – it wasn't anything – we weren't going live, right? We were just working what I was going to do to him. I was going to choke him, right, because he always turns his back. I'd mount him. He'd flip over. I'd throw in the choke just like I did in the second fight. So I'm ready to go, and we get going and just walking, right? So as I slip in the choke, I go to choke him. As I'm coming down to sink the choke in and flatten him out, his head pops up as I'm going down. And like I said, we're just walking through this, and his head hits me right on the fringe of my eye. Boom. It's like, no problem. It wasn't that hard, right? So I continued to choke, and he taps, and all of a sudden this blood drop comes on my arm, and I'm like, I reach up, and I'm bleeding. And I go, Dan. He looks up, and he goes, dude, you're cut. I go, well, how bad is it? He goes, man, it looks deep. And I go, shut up. I said, you already hit me. It wasn't hard, like, right? It wasn't even hard. So I look, and I go in the mirror, and I kid you not, it was deep. Real deep. So I go, okay, let's go to the hospital. Don't tell anybody. So we go to the hospital, and this is what pisses me off, because I told those guys, if you don't believe me, go check with the doctor. Mm. Because I went there and I told the doctor, can you double stitch this? Can you make it look like there's no cut? He goes, I can't, but I can double stitch it and make it tight. So if you want to fight, if the commissioner will let you, you'll be able to fight. But if you get hit, it might open up. And I said, well, I don't worry about that. I just need to have this thing tight so I can fight. He goes, well, I can make it tight. I can double stitch it. So we get it double stitched. I go to them because if I don't tell them, I'm in trouble, right? So I go to them and I take them to the back room and I say, and this is what really makes me mad, because they never told anybody this, and it pisses me off. I told them I can fight. Literally told them I'm fighting. And they looked at me and said, and we got to clear with the commission. And I said, listen, he double stitched it. I said, it's okay with me. I'll sign whatever you need me to sign, and I'm fighting. So they go to get the commission. And I told the commission the same thing. I can fight. If it gets cut and it gets stopped, that's on me. They said no. But you know what they didn't? You've never heard this story from them. Nobody told anybody this story. And that's the God's honest truth, is I told them I can fight. But yet they went with the conspiracy theory.
Hmm. So they went with the theory that you cut yourself to get out of the fight.
After everything that I had said to them, went to the commission and told them I could fight, and then they never said one thing to anybody about what I'm saying right now.
No. I've never heard this part of the story.
No, because they didn't want anybody to know that. They wanted to go with the conspiracy theory because they lost their company because I couldn't fight.
Mm.
That wasn't my fault. And that's what really makes me angry, is that they built this whole thing. They built that story just to discredit me.
Do you think it's because you had the issue with the pay, and then they're like, oh, all of a sudden you get cut,
so
it's just easy?
Yeah.
But you did not.
Well, no, because they know for a fact I said I could fight.
Yeah.
So there was none of that. There was none of that, that I did that, because I told them I will fight.
How did you get around the pay thing, them promising you that you'd be the highest paid guy?
We never got around it.
You just came to terms with it?
How was I, what I was going to do?
Well, I don't know. Wasn't it in the contract or something like that, that you'd be the highest paid guy on the card?
Yeah.
So couldn't you sue them for that?
How am I going to sue them? I didn't fight.
Yeah. But like, in other words, did you have to come to terms with that before you started rolling and cut yourself? Or
No. I was just doing it.
You were just doing it.
I'm fighting. I mean, I literally said I'm going to fight. I'll deal with this afterwards.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was fighting. And yeah, so once I made that decision, I was fighting.
And the cut happened on the night before or the day of?
No, the night before.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah.
And how close were you to getting cleared?
I mean, as far as I knew, I was going to fight.
You were.
I thought they were going to let me fight because I told them, I'll sign whatever you want me to sign.
Do you think they wanted you not to fight because they thought that maybe you would?
No, they wanted me to fight.
Okay.
No, they wanted me to fight. The commission is the one that made the final decision.
Right.
Right.
Florida Commission.
And I don't understand it either, because I mean, unless I don't know something, but I would have signed a waiver to fight. I literally told him, I'll do whatever. I said, if it comes open, you could stop it. I said, I get my risks, but I'll do it.
Where were you when that fight happened, Petrozella?
That was Kimbo. No. I was at the arena. We went to the arena. I was there.
You were there when he got knocked out?
I walked in the arena and said, yes.
You stayed?
Yes. I went there to the arena before the fight started and said, I'm fighting. Uh-huh. I was there. They told me I couldn't fight. I went to the arena to fight.
Wow. And then when they said no, what did you do?
I stayed.
You stayed?
Yeah.
To the best of my knowledge, you never met the press that night. Like, they didn't bring you to the press conference or anything. Why?
No.
To defend yourself. Why didn't you want to do that?
Ask them.
Interesting.
Ask them. Yeah. So I was there.
When you saw him get knocked out, what were you thinking? Should have been me?
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't have done it that way.
Sure.
I mean, I would have choked him.
Right.
Take him down and choked him. But. I mean, the writing was on the wall. He couldn't beat me, you know? I mean, like I said, I wasn't where I was at the next time I fought him. I was way older. But there was no question, right, that I was going to beat him. And in fact, his strength was standing. So Cetrigelli beat him at his strength, right? So putting him on the ground would have been like a cakewalk. So and he didn't even have that much experience at that time on the ground. So for me, it was just, I saw the writing on the wall. I was going to beat him. And I knew if they let me fight, there's no way he was going to hit me. I'm going to shoot on him, take him down, and then I just choke him out. And that's why I told him, say, hey, you know, let me fight. If it opens up, you guys can stop it. I said, but it ain't going to go that far. Mm. And they, and I was at the arena ready to fight.
Wow. Was it true that your brother suggested that he would come out and take the fight?
And he was announcing then.
Yeah. Did that bother you?
He's the one that really pushed that issue, too, when those guys came out and said that. He was the one that actually put it out on the air.
So did that bother you?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. Yeah, because he knows me. He knows me. He knows that that's something that – he knows that that's something I would never do. And for him to mention that, he was just taking a dig at me.
Were you on speaking terms back then?
No. This is when we were going to fight.
Right.
Yeah.
Did it bother you that he was trying to take your fight?
No.
Okay.
I didn't care. That didn't bother me. That did,
you just
that
didn't
never
like that he perpetuated
me.
That
It
that
bothered
story.
Me that he would say something like, because he knows who I am.
Right.
He knows who I am. And you know, I think the thing that bothered me the most was that nobody ever told this part of it, whereas I was at the arena.
Wow. I didn't
and
know
I was
there.
I was there to fight, and wow. they wouldn't let me fight. And I was there when he got knocked out.
Is that one of the great regrets of your career?
No. No, no, no. No way.
What is the greatest regret of your career? Do you have one?
I do, and it has to, and it's something I couldn't control, but it's the Tito fights. You know, knowing that, man, I just, man, if we were both in our prime, do you imagine that rivalry? Mm. That would have been just, that would have been awesome. That would have been a great rivalry.
Something about the Tito fights or just how they all went?
Yeah, because I was older and,
yeah.
you know, just didn't have the ability to compete with him.
Yeah.
And it just, it frustrates me because he's such a great fighter and I was a great fighter that we didn't get to meet each other in our prime.
I remember I was in college at the time and, you know, I followed mixed martial arts and I loved the UFC and watched you and watched the early days of UFC, watched you in WWF. And I remember flipping around and landing on the best damn sports show period and seeing you guys on there. I've told this story before and I was like, wow, I can't believe that the best damn sports show period is talking about UFC and MMA. Like you guys, I think, don't get enough credit for taking the sport from one stage to another. You guys helped bring the sport to the mainstream, right?
Can you imagine?
No one was talking about it.
No, I mean, we literally went to mainstream houses.
Yeah.
It was like on mainstream TV. And that's why I, when I look at that, it's a shame because as big as it was, do you imagine how much bigger it could have been if I was able to compete with them?
Right.
I mean, I had the verbiage. I had the charisma. He was a great counterpart to me. I mean, that was really, when you look at it in that era, Tito had nobody.
Yeah.
I mean, he was going through people and they were getting 30,000, 40,000 buys, maybe lucky. And Tito was a great fighter and great charisma, but he had nobody. It was a counterpart. And so for me to be able to come in there and do it, even though I was past my prime, I just look at it and go, man, can you imagine if I was 15 years younger?
Oh, yeah.
I mean.
You guys were magic together.
Yeah.
You were amazing. You really were. And it's unfortunate how, you know, it felt like each fight was just sort of anticlimactic, right?
Yeah.
And I can't imagine. It's probably most frustrating for you. Above all, so just how those three fights went, biggest regret. What about proudest achievement?
Oh, I always tell people, you know, and ask the question, well, do you wish that you could make all the money now as opposed to what you did in the past? No, because you know, we broke ground, right? We started this. We were the first. So it doesn't even compare. So my greatest has got to be, you know, first Pancras champion. It's never going to be taken away. First super fight, UFC single fight champion. Every belt goes through that single fight. I was the first. And then the Hall of Fame. Those are things that will live forever that can never change.
Is it crazy that your brother's not in the Hall of Fame?
That's stupid.
Right?
That's stupid.
All it does is devalue the Hall of Fame.
There has
to be some separation of feelings, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's not fair. It's just, Frank, I mean, you look, he beat Tito.
Yeah.
I mean, he beat Tito. He came in there. He dominated the weight division. And yet he's not even recognized. You just look at it and you go, man, you got to get out of the way. Stop trying to control history and make it about you. Let the history be told and you yourself will also be told in history. But it will not be told good if you keep trying to block it, because then you're going to be the one that they're going to hammer on for trying to change history.
Right. I would love to see an MMA Hall of Fame, right?
Yeah.
Just a neutral mixed martial arts Hall of Fame. The sport is old enough at this point to where I think it deserves one.
Well, what bothers me too is because I know somebody tried to do another Hall of Fame, and they did one that was supposed to be in all Hall of Fame, international, everywhere. And they put Hoist Gracie as number one. And I was like, why would you put Hoist Gracie number one? And they were, what are you talking about? I was like, do you realize that mixed martial arts was over in Japan before UFC ever opened up? So how is it that you're going to put him first if you're talking about an original international Hall of Fame? You've got guys like Maeda, Takada, Funaki, Masanori Suzuki. There's all these guys that were doing mixed martial arts before it was here. How do you put Hoist Gracie first if it's a true mixed martial arts Hall of Fame, international?
Right.
If you're doing U.S., I get it. But when you're talking about a Hall of Fame that's international Hall of Fame, how is it that you put somebody ahead of the people that actually did it years before him?
Fair point.
What about Hoist's grandfather?
Right. Helio.
Right. Hickson. Right.
Hickson.
I mean, Hickson is probably one of the greatest, I mean, in my opinion, he's probably the greatest Gracie practitioner of out of all of them, and has never been beaten. And he's not mentioned.
I have to respect the past, the history.
Yes.
Speaking of which, did you see The Rock give you props on Twitter?
Yeah.
Saying you're awesome. The man, yeah. You're the guy who paved the way for him?
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah, you know, and when we talk about the people changing history, right?
Yeah.
When you do that, your history is told in a much, much better light. It's appreciating history the way it is supposed to be appreciated, not the way you want it to be appreciated, the way it is.
Mm.
And for Rock to do that just tells you what kind of person he is, that he looks at history and he respects everyone's history and where they're at when it comes to him and their history. And so that was much appreciated.
Was he a good guy, like, in the young days, or was he kind of like a punk kid? You know, because originally they pushed him really quickly and then it didn't go well. What was he like in those early days?
He was a champion all the way.
Really?
I mean, you never heard a bad word out of his mouth. He was always willing to learn, even though he wasn't getting the opportunity to carry the mic. He was in a group of people and he was being overshadowed. You never heard him say one bad word.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is it shocking to see the star? He's become like the most famous action star in the world. Is that kind of shocking?
It is, since I watched it happen.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I never thought for a moment, especially where he started, where we started, and to see how fast he went from pro wrestling superstar to this actor who is the biggest action hero in our era now.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. Can I ask, what's your favorite WWF match?
Oh, forget about it. Not me personally, or being involved
for you,
in it?
You, the one that you were involved.
WrestleMania 13.
WrestleMania 13.
Referee.
Really?
Bret Hart, Stone Cold.
The double turn. You weren't even a part of it.
Oh, that's,
I mean, you didn't wrestle in it.
Yeah, but
it's one of the great moments in wrestling history.
Yeah, but it was a moment that helped me define my character.
Gotcha.
Because I didn't know how I was going to be a pro wrestler. And I watched those guys when they did it, and I literally felt like I was involved in a real match.
Because at that point, you hadn't wrestled yet?
No. I mean, I did, but I did one with Vernon. And,
yeah, that was your intro, right?
Yeah. Then I got to do one with Vader, and I got to kind of do that same kind of match that I saw Bret Hart and Stone Cold do with Vader. And it really helped me understand that I could be a hard character and get over in pro wrestling. Whereas before, I was like, man, how am I going to do? These guys are probably going to not trust me, and you know, they're not going to let me do what I want to do. And Bret told me, dude, you be you. Just be you. And when he went out and did that match with Stone Cold, I was like, okay, if he can do that, then I can do me.
Did you love that time? Was that a lot of fun being a part of that era, the Attitude Era?
It was awesome, man. It was like literally watching wrestling change from this flamboyant, flip your hair back, look in the mirror to see if your body looks good, to this kick-ass, take no names, take no prisoners era.
Wow.
Yeah,
it was so much fun to watch you in it, because as a guy watching UFC and see like Ken Shamrock, you opened the door, I think, for the Brock Lesnar's, for the Ronda Rousey's, for those people to come and be accepted. I don't know. I feel like you were accepted in WWF. Did the MMA community turn on you for doing that? Oof. The fake stuff?
My team, half my team did.
They looked down on you.
Well, they looked down on me, but they weren't happy with me that I was going to pro wrestling because they were taking some heat.
Right.
And I remember the media hammered me, and they didn't know why I did it. They just thought I was doing it because I wanted to do it, but I couldn't make a living. Still have my fighter's gym, still have the fighter's house, still have the group home, and still have raised my family and be able to take care of those at-risk kids with the money that they wanted to pay me. Bob Myers wanted to pay me. I was supposed to get a raise. He couldn't do it. And I respected that because they were fighting all the time in legal battles. And I said, well, I got to go do something else. And so luckily for me, I was able to find something like pro wrestling that I could still go in and kind of do my submissions and still have fun with it and make good money. Wasn't guaranteed I was going to make it, but I took the risk, and it paid off for me. But the first probably year, it wasn't pretty, man. I was called all kinds of names and took a lot of nothing. I mean, Rhonda feels like she got bashed, but if she knew what I went through when I first did it, is nothing compared to what I went through that she went through. And I know she did because she left when she got beat and people said she ran. She chickened out. I mean, she got a lot of stuff.
She didn't handle it well.
No, but it's okay. It's hard. But I just kept quiet and just went and did my thing because in my mind, I felt just like with anything else, success will heal all. And so I really put my nose to the grindstone and said, you know, there's only two ways out of this, successful or I'm dead.
Yeah. You don't regret it.
No.
That was the right call, 100%. Oh, yeah. It made you way more famous.
Oh, yeah.
And then when you came back, it was a bigger deal, right?
Tito Ortiz, Ken Shamrock, man. Right. I wasn't the greatest fighter in the world at that time, but because of my popularity that I built through pro wrestling, I was able to come back to that and be able to draw a huge crowd and still have people want me to fight him 2 to 3 more times,
right?
Even after losing and being dominated.
Yeah. I know you say you don't watch often because you're just too busy, but is there anyone in MMA right now that you say, okay, this guy's fighting, I have to go watch him? Is there one fighter that you really love right now that reminds you that could have hung in the early days like with you guys that is a throwback fighter? Is there anyone that comes to mind?
I think Khabib.
Khabib.
I'm sorry, Khabib. Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah, Khabib. It's just something about him that is just smooth. I mean, he doesn't take a whole lot of risk. He gets guys down, and he's just so dominating. And his story, wrestling bears, man. Yeah. The way his father, you know, he's like – it's an interesting story. He's an interesting character. And I think that what I want to see from him now is for him to grow, you know, be more flamboyant, a little bit more character.
Okay.
Because what's going to happen is that he's going to get to that point where people are going to be used to seeing him do the same thing over and over and over again. And it just gets old. So even though it's a real fight, you still have to keep rebranding yourself. You still have to keep people interested in wanting you to fight, watching you fight. And that's where I think a lot of guys make a mistake is they don't realize it's still entertainment.
Are you a fan of Connors?
Yeah, I am.
You are?
Yeah, I do. Yes.
Despite all the recent...
Yeah, you know, he's young.
Yeah.
You know, having that much money and having that much popularity is hard for anybody to handle. But at this point, he hasn't really gone over the Tyson line, right? Where he's done something that he can't come back from. So, but if he doesn't stop, he will. And I think that if anybody's working with him, need to help him understand that that money will be gone in a heartbeat if he does something stupid and he gets sued. All that money's going to be gone. And so he's in a good place right now. He needs to work doing his sales and the stuff that he's doing and keep his nose clean. Stay out of that problem, man, because that's – you look at Mike Tyson, man. The guy's living on borrowed time because – he put himself into too many different situations because he felt like he was untouchable.
So let's end on this. We have WWE, of course, AEW, there's New Japan. Wrestling is doing really great these days. Where, in your opinion, does Impact fit into all of this?
I think Impact's at the bottom when it comes to WWF, AEW, but it's rising.
You feel that?
Oh, yeah. I think we're at a great spot right now. The things I'm seeing happening within that locker room, the talent that we have there, I think it'll be probably 6 months to a year, and we're going to be right there, at the bottom where WWF's at. I believe that. They're doing it right. Storylines are being very creative. They're not afraid to cross the line and do things that may be controversial. And I think in pro wrestling, it is entertainment. And it is a big E when it comes to pro wrestling, entertainment. And the more that you can shock people and get people to go, wow, did that just happen? better off you are.
When's your next match?
It is Friday.
This Friday?
Yes.
And it's airing on Access TV?
Yes, Access TV. We are at the Melrose Ballroom in New York City. We're doing a TV taping.
Okay.
And so I'm excited about that. It's going to be fun. I'm actually going to be wrestling for the title against Sami Callihan. And so I'm excited about that. But here's one more thing I want to do, because, you know, I love working with at-risk kids.
Yes.
And we have something we're doing with the Variety Boys and Girls Club in Queens, where I will be doing a rock, paper, scissors. I'm challenging the kids there.
Wow.
So that's today.
Today.
From 5 to 6. So that's fun. I love working with – it's at 5 p.m. That's right. But I love working with kids and being able to make them laugh and have fun, because I came from a hard family when I was young and out of group homes and stuff like that. So for me to be able to go out and actually make kids laugh and have fun with them is really big and important to me.
How do you look so good? How is this possible? How can you look like that at 55 and fly like that and be that athletic? How is this possible? You are defying logic.
You know, I think for me, it's about dedication. And I think the one thing that I missed, I probably took about 10 years off my career of not doing well, is because I didn't rest. I didn't give my chance. I didn't say, okay, I'm taking a year off. Never did that. I was lucky if I took a month or 2 months off. And I think that hurt me really bad. I thought I could have had a longer career, much more successful at the end than I did, because I didn't take that time. So I think for me, it's really about being dedicated and being committed to my training and my diet, but at the same time, making sure that I rest properly.
I wish you the best, my friend, and I don't say it lightly. I mean, people like you, you are the reason why people like me get to cover mixed martial arts for
thank
a living.
You.
So thank you for everything that you've done for the sport, and I wish you nothing but success in this new venture back with Impact. I remember when you won the TNA / NWA title way back when, like 17 or so years ago. Remember that vividly, and it's cool to see you back thriving, healthy, happy, and doing your thing over there. So thank you for doing this. I really appreciate it, and I wish you the best this Friday and beyond.
Appreciate
all the best.
You. Thank you.
All right, so that was a lot of fun. Great stuff from Kent Shamrock. Always great to have the guests in studio. TST, what did you learn from Kent Shamrock today?
Well, I learned, first of all, who Kent Shamrock was.
Wow.
I had never heard of him until today.
A real noob.
He was a very big guy in the history of the UFC and MMA and wrestling. You know me, I'm not a wrestling guy, but as I'm learning, there's all sorts of crossover now between the two sports, which I had no idea. So very influential figure. He thinks that today's fighters are soft, that the BMF belt was a joke. I learned a lot.
Yes. He is a very smart guy, a very passionate guy, and a guy who has seen it, done it all. So it was a pleasure and honor to have him in studio. Also, by the way, we had the road show last week, and I do believe you attended your first UFC event, although I have a bone to pick with you. We did the road show, if you will, the live show with Peter Rosenberg, Midtown Manhattan. It was great. We had a lot of fans there. I want to thank everyone who came out prior to UFC 244. I went to do my duties, and then you disappeared. I did not hear from you. I didn't get a text. I didn't get a call. I was worried sick. I don't even know if you actually attended the event. We have not even spoken about it.
What did you expect, Errol? You ditched our radio show halfway through to go do your TV show. You had told me earlier that you'd be up top somewhere watching the fight. So I'm like, okay, Ariel's a big star now. He's going to go be a big star. He doesn't need me. So I figured you had just forgotten about me and that you didn't want to be seen with me in public.
Where did you go, honestly? Did you go to the arena?
I did go to the arena. I had some trouble getting into the arena because security was a little tight, but I was there with Rosenberg and a guy from 98.7 ESPN New York, and we watched the fights in the ESPN suite, and we had a blast.
Wow, you watched the entire thing.
So we may have gotten some wine during the early prelims, but then we got there just in time for the Kevin Lee fight.
And did you enjoy it?
I did enjoy it. It was a lot of fun. Now, I thought the fights themselves left a little something to be desired.
Wow.
I didn't think, especially the BMF belt, I didn't think it was a great fight. I know there's a lot of fanfare around it, but the fight itself, didn't think it was anything special.
Wow.
And Darren Till, like, it went, I think that one went the distance, right? But it still, like, wasn't a wildly entertaining fight. It was pretty average. And I enjoyed it, though. I enjoyed the whole scene. It was a lot of fun.
Hot takes. What was your favorite fight or favorite performance? Anything? Did you enjoy anything?
Oh yeah, no. Well, listen, I certainly enjoyed the beer that I was having in the suite from up top.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I enjoyed the whole scene. I can't. I
Well, Kevin Lee was a great knockout.
I think Kevin Lee, I'm trying to think if that was the...
Corey Anderson, Johnny Walker, did you see that?
No, I think I missed those.
Unbelievable.
What do you want from me, Ariel?
Unbelievable. And not even a text, not even a, you know, I'm okay, don't be worried, don't feel like you may have lost, like nothing. I got nothing from you. No update.
I didn't think you wanted to hear from me.
I was worried sick.
I didn't know that. Yeah, you texted me the next day. So, well, wow, I didn't even know you cared this much about me.
Well, I mean, as we established a couple weeks ago, you're just a young pup. I feel like your mother would want me to look out for you when you're in the big city.
I appreciate that, Ariel. Okay, all right, I'm changing my mind about this conversation.
All right.
But let's get to some reviews, huh?
Let's.
Okay. All right, so the first one here comes from Skrills.
Now, what is this? What is this music?
So, you know, there's the event in Moscow this weekend.
This is Russian music?
It's supposedly Russian music. I just searched Russian music and this came up.
I like the thought.
So, a 5-star review says that best MMA show around.
Thank you,
Ariel, for all the great words and all the great work you do. I always look forward to your show, especially after a fight. You have the best info in the game. Keep up your hard work. I'm sure it's paying off, he says.
Wow. I guess that's all just sort of, you know, the way you look at it, right?
Whatever.
Okay.
Jersey Explorer also has 5 stars. Now, this is more about your Monday show.
Oh.
So this show, and he's referring to the show not from this week, but from last week. So pre-UFC 244, where you had Action Bronson on, Nate Diaz, Masvidal. This show was by far one of the most unique shows Ariel has ever done.
Wow.
I love having live guests on walking around New York City, and hearing Nate speak this way is so much better than his usual interviews. Mr. Masvidal is always a great interview, but the Action Brogman segment was sick.
Wow. These are great reviews, and I urge everyone to continue to rate, review, subscribe. Let's vault up the rankings, if you will. It's been a big week. Actually, it's been a big month for the show, right?
Yeah, actually, October was the best month that Ariel Helwani's MMA show has ever seen.
As far as what? Downloads?
In terms of downloads, yeah. Total number of downloads. So you're moving on up.
Yeah, let's try to break that.
It must be great producing.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, just a little hint. Let's see how many people make it to the end. Just a little hint. Might have some big news about a potential road show coming up in December. I'll leave it at that. But I'll tell you to keep it locked, as the kids say, and stay tuned. Boom. As TST hits the music. Did Rosenberg call you TST?
He did. He did during the show. And we actually had a fine chat about some of my my beliefs in life.
Yes. Oh, I learned so much.
Afterward, which I know you were very interested in. People love hearing about all my things, but maybe that's a conversation for another time.
Yeah, we could do a whole other show on that, on your minimalist ways, screenless Saturday, the fact that you don't own furniture, the fact that you eat on the ground, that you sleep on a yoga mat. I mean, the people don't understand the kind of layers that TST has.
Whole different level.
Yeah, very complex. In one way, you're complex, but in another way, you're just very minimal.
Exactly.
You're simple.
It's simple.
It's a fascinating juxtaposition. But for now, we are out of time. Thank you very much to the world's most dangerous man, Ken Shamrock, for stopping by. What a week it has been since we last spoke last Wednesday doing this show, UFC 244 and all that stuff. If you missed Monday's show, we had every single main card winner. TST missed it, by the way. He was not there. But anyway, every single main card winner. We had Israel Adesanya in studio, Adi Attar, manager for Conor McGregor. And later today on ESPN Plus, Chael and I talk all things 244. So if you want our thoughts on the stoppage, where Masvidal and Diaz go from here, a little Corey Anderson talk, and a whole lot more, check out Ariel and the Bad Guy later today on ESPN Plus. For now, though, we are out of time. Appreciate all of you for listening and subscribing and reviewing and rating and all that stuff and more each and every week. I'm off to Washington, D.C., another sideline gig for me on Friday. Can't wait for that. Wizards, Cavs. But of course, I'll be back in the saddle Saturday for UFC Moscow. And you can watch that on the platform Chael and I built with our hands off our shoulders, ESPN Plus. For TST, I'm Ariel. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the fights. We'll talk next week.